Guys, hi. Welcome back from the break. Hello. Still waving. Quick show of hands, who was here in the last session, MBAM? About half, okay. For the benefit of the guys who weren't here in the last session about MBAM, it was awesome, right? Yeah, they're laughing, not clapping, that's not good. Shouldn't have enforced that survey thing so much, maybe, huh? Yeah. My name's Craig. I am a Premier Field Engineer. I work for Microsoft in Denmark for the last 4.5 years. I've been a field engineer that whole time. I've been living in Denmark for 7 years as well. So jeg kan godt tale dansk. Hey, han sagde det igen. Can't vote, but I can speak the language. Isn't that nice? So today's talk is about user experience virtualization. This is something you may not have even heard of. Who's played with it already? One, two, okay, cool. Who's played with it a lot out of you two? You're not going to learn a damn thing today because everyone's not heard of it, so we have to start all the way down there, okay? Just so you know. So that means 8 on the survey as well, right? Just by default, good man. Thumbs up, excellent. Yeah, so before we get started, actually, it's not been released yet, right? It's still a beta product. I think they're calling it release candidate now. So what we talk about here may actually change by the time it actually comes out. There may be features added or removed, okay? So long as we're clear about that before we start. But the product group has given us this statement, which says that we'll get it before Christmas, okay? And it'll be part of MDOP, which will also be done before Christmas. The MBAM product group hasn't said the same thing yet. I don't know if there's something in that or not, but for those who were here in the last session. What I want you guys to take out of this is that feeling of hatred that you have for roaming profiles finally has somewhere where it can go and be productive, okay? This roaming profiles idea, we can finally throw the whole thing away and do something completely different. But couldn't we do that before? Couldn't we get rid of them already? Couldn't we go and redirect the whole bunch of data someplace else and then just have this registry file that's quite small and roam that one maybe? We could, but what's the downside to doing that? You can't roam between 32-bit and 64-bit. You can't roam between Vista to 7, 7 to 8, back again. Can't do any of that stuff. So yeah, we want to take that idea away, right? That's why we're here. We can do something about it. There are competing products out there. This is a 1.0 release. It's kind of a tricky thing that we're trying to do here. Once you see what we're trying to do, you'll see that, oh my God, that's really quite difficult. And there's some things that will come across, not during the demos today, but as you start playing around with it, that may not do exactly what you want it to do, okay? But what I want you to take away from it today is how it works and why, so that you can get a better idea of how you're going to deploy it and try and troubleshoot problems and fix things, okay? So this is more of a 300 class than hopefully I think you've been to in all of campus days this week, I hope. Hey. Very important, as I said to the last guys, for when you come to survey time, right? Because the way they decide what types of sessions we get next year is based on the feedback. If lots of shiny-shoed sales guys really like their sessions, they all vote for them, and they vote really well, and that's what you get, right? So if we're going to fight back, guys, there's one way to do it, all right? I'll bang you in the head again when we get to the end of the session. Words. There's lots of stuff here that doesn't quite ring well with me. What we're going to do is show you a way of moving settings from one machine to another, independent of whether it's 7 or 8 or 64-bit or 32-bit. But we got pictures of phones and stuff up here. I think that's crazy. Ideally, that's where we'd like to go to, right? So the same app can be managed in the same way no matter what platform we're on. But yes. It's all about roaming profiles today, people. Without ever saying, I think we go through this entire slide deck that comes from the product group that made this product themselves. This is how they want to pitch it. They never say roaming profiles throughout all of this, I think. See? Brilliant, right? What does that mean? What we want to do is keep this as simple as possible, All right, we don't want to go and have to do the same thing that like the MBAM guys did, which is bring up an IIS front end talking to a back end SQL server. SQL Server must be Enterprise Edition. We don't want to have this big stringent set of requirements. What we want is an agent, 6.8 megabytes, boom, down onto your machine, and a file share, and then five group policy settings. That's what we want. Something as simple as that, right? I said before to the last guys at the MBAM session that 9-point-something megabytes worth of an installer, and we're going to talk about it for an hour and 15 minutes. That's more words per megabyte than you've ever... This is even more words per megabyte than the last session. This is unbelievable. 6.9 megabytes. Okay, so here's the current problem. Anyone not familiar with roaming profiles? Wow. Awesome. So here's the current problem. We install an MSI across two different machines, right? Poof, out it goes. User logs onto one machine, sets up their settings just the way they want to do it. In fact, who here in the last year has gone and reinstalled their main work machine, main home machine? Right. Is that something you want to do just once a week? Nice and easy? No. Setting up all my stuff takes me a really, really, really long time, and I don't like doing it. And we do it a lot. All right? We go from machine to machine to machine a lot, and people who do this a lot really hate it. Has anyone talked to a doctor about how it is to use IT in a hospital? Right? They will punch you in the face if you say you're an IT guy. That's their first reaction. They hate us so much. Why? Because they log into one machine, they type in their credentials, they wait for their roaming profile to come down, all this weird redirection stuff to go on, and then they get a vanilla setting for this new application that happens to be on this machine because that's the only place this application is, right? It's on this machine, maybe the one over there for this weird electrospectrography machine, whatever it may be. Right, and they go to another machine, and then they type in their credentials. This one could be a terminal server, and they get a completely different roaming profile because terminal server roaming profiles aren't the same as desktop ones. Right? And it takes them 5 minutes to do this log on and log off business. They can't leave themselves logged in. And there's patience, and there's patience, and there's patience. And they spend so much time with IT. Right? We've got to get rid of that for these guys. They're just drowning in this stuff. That's why they punch us in the face. And that's that guy there. Right? He's just logged into his first machine, makes the settings, logs off, goes to the next machine, and maybe the same settings will be there, maybe not. Depends. Was it a terminal server he logged in, a VDI, a physical machine? Who knows what it was? And the applications could be different across them. We make things a little bit better by having a roaming set of data, right? There's settings and data, they're calling it. This is just your roaming profile share, right? Where we can get some stuff going across there. But it gets big and heavy, right? This is why we went and redirected all of our files, because that set of data that roams from one machine to the other, it gets big, heavy, slow, takes a long time. Who has seen an OST file in a roaming profile share? Yeah. Who's in charge of placing OST files? So we got to get away from these roaming profiles. We know all this. Okay, good, good, good. And the key point there, and I've made it a couple of times, is it doesn't matter if it's going to a VDI or a terminal server or a remote app. Remote app is like a terminal server connection where you just see one application, right? You've got an icon on your desktop, you double-click it, and it looks like it's installed locally, but really it's just a terminal server with the exact size and maybe the icon's down by the clock, and it just comes down. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how you interact with this application. We want to have the settings the same. Doesn't matter if it's an AppV application either, right? AppV version 5. In fact, someone's played around with it on our little discussion board internally, and they said that it works really well on 4.6 update 6. One to write down. But yeah, if your application is an MSI of Word installed locally, or it is a VDI installation with an AppV installation, the same settings from one machine will roam to the other one. All right? No problem. Boom, 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 boom. Don't like the idea of a firewall, because what we're going to do is, when we're going to save our settings, we're going to talk to this big box at the top right there that's called UEV Settings Store. That's just a file share, right? How many of you guys expose just file shares out to the internet through your firewall? Not a whole lot, right? Direct access, you can, because then your firewall becomes something completely different, right? But yeah, most people don't have that. Roam settings between 7 and 8. Yes, we talked about that. Operates in offline mode. No point roaming my settings somewhere if I only ever go back to my corporate office once a week. right? There's no point roaming them around because I'll need to get in contact with that share. If I can't contact it, maybe the application won't start, right? So what I want to do is integrate this new thing that we're coming up with, the 6.8 megabytes. We want that to be integrated with offline files. Client-side cache, this makes people's skin crawl, right? Offline files, dear God, you're not actually going to use that. That was a fine response in XP. I'm happy with that. Not anymore, right? Windows 7 offline files works brilliant. If it doesn't, you're doing something wrong, right? It works really, really, really well. And this thing leverages it as well, right? So we go and install the agent, and it goes and talks to offline files. It goes and speaks to it itself and says, guess what, we're going to do something here. We're going to synchronize that data that's up on the file share that we just got told to use, right? Maybe we don't need that for all of them. We definitely need it for laptops, but we don't necessarily need it for VDIs. We don't need it for terminal servers. We don't need it for corporate machines, desktops that are always hardwired, right? So we can switch it on and off, but we use it. So I could be off making settings changes while I'm offline, and as soon as I've got a connection back to my file share, I upload those settings again. Ooh, icons, right. Here we go. Anything interesting in here? We can be really granular about how we define what settings they are that we need to roam from one place to another. All right. What we do is we define a set of templates in advance, and we build in some. As we install it, there's some that are just for native Windows, like Calculator, Notepad, WordPad, to give you an idea of how they work. There's one for Office 2010 that's quite big, one for Link. And we target those settings. We say, well, what is it about these applications that become settings that I care about? Right? And if you're talking about, say, Office, there's different types of settings for maybe registry-based settings that I need to worry about. Right, when I go and change what color it should be, whether it's going to be silver or blue as a background in my office environment, that's a registry setting. But it could be that there's an INI file somewhere that's really important to me. Maybe a SAP installation has an INI file that I need to get across with me. We can do both of those. And you could say, all I want to synchronize is just that SAP application. Right? That's all. I know that you can do all this other stuff, but this is the one that's really important to us. This is the one that bothers us the most. When we go from one place to another, we just got to have SAP working every single time. Or it could be that doctor's application that he has to follow across, right? You get to choose which registry keys you follow. They get bundled up, packaged up, and sent up to a file share. Every time I modify them, put them up, right? And every time I need them, when I go to a new machine, I compare what I pulled down last time versus what's up on the share and say, oh, there's something new up there. Apparently, I've gone and changed that setting. Comes right down again. Right, so the user can still define what they want to define, but we just centralize the settings someplace, and it's exactly the settings they need. We as administrators define the templates that decide what these settings are. Registry keys, files, go. What about profiles? That's really easy to define as a group policy. That's a machine setting. What we're talking about here are user-based settings, right? So only settings for the user, not for the computer. Anything that's an HKEY current user is what we're targeting, not HKEY local machine. Anything that is a file within their profile, within username, app data, roaming, local, in those folders.
And what about the wireless profiles they have at other places that you want to save? So if you install a new machine to them, they will get these wireless profiles on the new machine.
Okay. So the question is, I've got a... I should be repeating these questions, sorry, for the recording. The question is, I've got a wireless network at home, right, with some SSID and some password, and when I go and reinstall my home machines, I want that setting to go from one place to another to my new machines, all that sort of thing. This is all controlled through group policies, talking to a file share. Do you have that at home? Right. Yeah. So users, when they take their laptop and they take it home, they have their wireless SID set up, right? So that, and it's cached on their machine. If you turn on that machine and you're not logged on, does that wireless still work? Yes. Because that wireless setting is a property of the machine now, right? So it's not a user setting, so we can't roam it. Right? We only are going to target user-based settings. Even if you were to get around that one, you would have a group policy that defines it, and it would you'd probably want to tell all of your home users to have the same username and password, or the same SSID and password, right, to get around that. Which would be quite cool, actually, I think. Then they can like go to each other's houses. Set up some big network. yeah. Yeah, sorry. Another question. Right. Okay, so the question is, I'm running Outlook on one machine and I'm running Outlook on another machine at the same time, and I change one setting on one Outlook. How do I get it across to the other one? So what happens is, for applications, we will, as soon as the application shuts down, the agent jumps in, grabs the settings, packages them up according to the template. Right? It could be they're saved in a location that we're not monitoring at all, but if they are in a monitored location, I'll grab them, package them up, zip them up as well, set them up into the file share. Right? And the only other time that I'm going to pull it down is when I start the application. So every time I start that application, whether it is on any machine, the same machine or a different machine, then I'll pull it down. And it's always a case of last writer wins, because I'm going to do date modification as the comparison. So I need all of my clocks to be basically in sync as well. Right? This isn't really a system, just like roaming profiles, isn't really a system for people logged in simultaneously making simultaneous changes at the same time. It's not meant for that. For things that aren't applications that start and shut down, things like Windows themes, right? We will do the same thing whenever you lock the screen. As soon as I lock it, I bundle up those theme settings and send them up onto the network. As soon as I unlock, I pull them back down again. And log off and log on as well, right? But we'll get more into that. I'll do some demos. In fact, these are just slides that are going to drive you guys crazy, so I'll just skip past all of those and go straight to cool demos. Right. Hey. So what we've got here is there's an ADMX file, user experience virtualization.ADMX, that goes and defines my group policies, right? So I've put it up into my policy definitions folder on the sysfile share. Cool, so every group policy editor gets to see that. And all that gets to define is things like this. So we've got it in two places. We'll start at the machine. We can tell our client, where am I going? So I'm under Windows Components. All right, and then drop down a little bit here to User Experience Virtualization. This will configure settings for this entire machine. Doesn't matter who logs on, these are going to be the settings. Right? I also have user settings. Machine settings always beat user settings, so if there's conflicts. So it's probably likely that I'll actually configure the user settings, right? Because I might want for all of my standard users to have these settings apply, and they'll roam their settings. But for an administrator who logs into multiple machines, I don't need him to roam his stuff. Or maybe I do, but only just a few things, right? And I'll show you an example of what he might want to roam. So here's our user settings down here. Same exact settings, and then we've got additional granularity for different applications. This is the built-in ADMX file, okay? Built-in as it's a slightly separate download, but it's meant to come with the product. But we can choose what we're going to roam with this stuff, right? IE10 settings, for example. And it's files as well, so favorites and things can also be roamed, right? Not just how my control panel looks inside Internet Explorer. So what have we got here? What can we use? I've gone and defined both machine and user, and I'm defining user just to give an example of an administrator or not an administrator, I can't remember. So start at the top. Do not use offline files, right? So this setting will be enabled for all machines that are on the LAN, right? And it will be disabled for all of my roaming machines, right? Things that need to work offline as well. What else have we got here? Should I roam Windows settings? This is a user-based group policy setting. Should I roam user settings like, what have we got there? Themes, desktop settings, background colors, these sorts of things. Should they roam as well? Most people, apparently, when they've been putting this stuff in, haven't been roaming these because users can just go and change them anyway, and it's just more data to bundle up and send up. And in fact, a theme on Windows 7 is not the same as a theme on Windows 8. Windows 8 can download a .theme file from the internet and mess with it so it will work on a Windows 8 machine, But that same package does not work on a Windows 7 machine, right? So we don't really want to mess around with themes too much, I don't think. When we bundle up these packages, we upload them onto the network. How big are they? Remember I said each time you launch the application, it has to check the file version, date modified, right? And if there's a new version, I have to pull it down. And I'm actually quite clever about it. I'll pull down just a delta file. So if I've gone and saved like a bunch of registry keys and they come up to like, I don't know, 50K, and I dump up that 50K, if I go and change one setting, all I'm going to upload is just 1K, right? And that's the thing that I pull down. If everything else remains the same, I'll just pull down the delta file. When should I start panicking? What if I upload 100 megabytes, right? Things are going to start slowing down. So what we can do is tell our agent that's installed on the machine, start generating event logs if it becomes too big. And I've set my limit quite low so that I can generate logs all the time, so you can see a little bit more information about what's going on. If it's taking too long to do the synchronization across the file share, give up, right? So we don't freeze log off. Remember I said it'll synchronize if you lock the screen, it'll synchronize when you log off. So you can sometimes get a little pop-up message saying Windows user virtualization is stopping this computer from shutting down, logging off. To avoid that, we can bang this number in here. So just wait 2 seconds. Or if I don't have a connection to the server, when should I give up? Where should I save my settings? Now, this is quite cool. We're going to do two things here. If this is no value, if there's nothing in here, what we will do is save it to the user's home directory as it is defined on their user account in AD. Okay, that's a thumb up already. That's pretty good. So let me go and grab my user account. Let's see what I've done there. Users, have I got it in there? Yes, I do. I'm using poor old test user again. I hope there he is. Profile, right? So I told him to map his H drive to some DFS share, right? I'm using DFS namespaces, as you would for your roaming profiles. Talk to the home drive folder, and then dump it to his username, right? That was percent username percent, but then of course it goes and changes it to test user. Sets up the folder, everything's fantastic. And it will put it into his H drive, unless I go and configure the value, and then it will put it wherever I tell it to put it. And did I do that on this one? On this one, but up on the computer I did. Like I say, I did this on the computer. Setting storage path. DFS share, right? Because it works just fine with the DFS path. Save them to UEV settings. So I've gone and set up my own file share for this stuff, just this stuff alone, and then put it to username, whoever the user is, right? Even though it's applying to the computer account, it still figures out which particular user you're talking about. Doesn't matter if it's a terminal server or what, all right? And those settings, I put them. The DFS path eventually goes to UEV, and then I've got the home directories in here. There's my test user, and I've got user settings in here. Settings packages, little hidden folder. Oh, we got stuff in there already, because I've already logged on with him. Let's clean out all that stuff so we start from fresh, eh? Delete. Cool. What else was there? The other folder there is templates. So these are the XML files that define what applications and what registry keys we should be monitoring for. Okay. These ones are all built in, and they live on your machine. So they go to C, Program Data, Microsoft, UEV, templates, and every machine gets them. I could get a group policy that comes along and says, do you know what, those settings, they're quite limited. I want to go and define other settings like cmd.exe or Adobe Acrobat Reader or Process Explorer or RegEdit or whatever else it is, right? I could have different settings. I could say whatever you've got built in there, don't use those. Use what I define up here. And then it's up to my agent every now and again, schedule task, every now and again go and talk to that file share, pull down this information and apply it to myself, right? So I take a copy of these gigantic files. Look how big they are. Woo. Right? Take a copy of those and I put them someplace else in my file system and then I know to use them. When I use them, what I do is I just go and merge them into my registry, an HK local machine, and say, remember, each time an application fires up, check to see if it matches anything in here. Is it one of these executables? Is it the right version number? Right? Is it an executable name that I should look for? Is it a right version number? I get to define version number ranges as well. And if it is, these are the registry keys and these are the files that I need to track. Okay. So if I want to configure that stuff, where are we? Settings template catalog path. So where should my catalog of templates live? And what should I do with the built-in templates that come with it? Just get rid of those. Okay. I could make that say /Contoso/UEV templates. And then I need something else to push my templates down onto that machine, like group policy preferences has a file copy thingamajig. SCCM could do it. Who knows, right? Something else could push my templates if I really want them to live locally. If you're worried about that performance hit of those gigantic XML files getting copied across once a day. Good. Didn't think we'd be too worried about that. And then switch it on or off, right? Should it be used for this machine or not? Or if it's to the user, should this user be using UEV or not? Right, so if this group policy applies to an administrator, I might say, no, don't use UEV at all. Just switch it all off. Cool. So let's see it in action, I guess. Hey, what I've got, so this machine here is just my central file share. That's all this one does. And I'll show you about creating your own templates a little bit later. Let's get rid of the slides. So I have a Windows 7 machine, x86-64, sorry, and only the administrator and the built-in administrator have logged on. Right, nobody else has logged on to this machine. So what I'll do is I'll now log on as test user. Right, so just so that you know that this is not a magic act that I'm about to do. So let me log off. And log on as test user. So he'll take a little bit longer to log on, right? Because it's got to build up the default profile. Do that search and replace. On the other side, while he's warming up, I have another machine that is Windows 8, right? Not the same OS, that has, let's see, the same scenario, I hope. Settings, users, yes. So test user has never logged onto this machine. We don't have a registry for him, nothing, right? So I'll just wait until this guy over here has finished logging in before we do anything with that account. In fact, you guys trust me now. This is a clean machine. I can log into it. We'll save a little bit of time here, actually, if I do that. So sign out. Okay. So we've cooked this guy here, and we saw that we cleaned out all of his settings from my past messings around. They're all gone from the file share. So what I'll do is I'll run, is it Process Explorer was one of those templates. Let's go and have a look. Campusdays.local, DFS. Templates. So these are all the applications I'm looking for, Process Explorer 64. So I've gone and built a template in advance. I don't want to use one of these boring ones here because it's, you know, like Word, it can change colors, woohoo. We want to use something a little bit more interesting. All right, so where am I going here? C, program files, sysinternals, Process Explorer 64. I won't run as admin because then I have to elevate, use somebody else's credentials, work in their user context. Don't want to do that. But Process Explorer works fine for me. Now, I've never logged on before, right? So I have to go and accept the EULA. When I do that, what do? Do I write an INI file? Do I write to the registry? What the heck's going on, right? I only have to click agree once. If I open it again, it's done. Fires up. Let's go and make some changes to it. This is the default view that you get, right? But I want to go and add the columns that I think are most important. Which of these applications are running a 64-bit and which are 32-bit? Which ones are running elevated or running as low priority or running as me. Let's go and add those two columns. 64-bit medium, yep, cool. And then, of course, the main other thing you want to do with Process Explorer is configure your symbols path so that you can see exactly what each executable is doing. Let's go into here. I can never remember these lines here, so I just configure my symbols. Don't use that DLL, use this one. and then go and download them from here and cache them locally. Wonderful. All right, so I've got these two extra columns and symbols configured. Close it down. When it closed it down, the agent had already been working. You saw the agent, right? The UEV agent jumped in and did lots of stuff and was annoying me really badly? No. It's already done its magic, right? When I closed it, it saved the settings. How do I know that it saved its settings? Let's go up here. DFS, UEV settings, test user. Ah, it didn't work. I told you before, it's hidden. Nobody said anything. Settings packages. Shit, it really didn't work. Well, that's annoying, isn't it? Do I have the group policy applied? Yes, I must do if it's got that setting on there. Okay, maybe the version didn't match. Oh, bother. This is not supposed to be the way. Templates. I was meant to show you this bit after. Go and edit one of these guys. All right, so there is no file version specified here. So what I'm saying is I've got a friendly name for this package. I have an identifier for the package. Right, so I could have multiples of these for Process Explorer, but I want to make this one quite specific. I could also be very specific in here and define version numbers and things. That's what I was looking for, but there aren't any. What it's triggering on is any process with a file name of procxp64. Go and look here for any settings. When you find them, you've made a match. This is what you should go and save, right? But what does that mean? Software, system internals. What software? Whose software? What are you talking about here? Registry. Let's go have a look. See if there are registry keys to find. Regedit. Local machine? No, not local machine. Current user. Software. Sysinternals. Process Explorer. There's a bunch. A whole lot of things that I didn't define. That one I did. Right? That was the debugger path to the DLL. And I guess some of these might define columns and things in here. There's the other string path that I typed in there too. So the stuff's in there. Is EULA accepted? There we go. This is the registry key that goes and says you have accepted the EULA, and it's allowed for you to go and push this key out to all of your machines, so you never get prompted for that, for any of your sysinternals tools. But it's one folder per tool, right? But why didn't it work? It's an interesting. Okay, troubleshooting again. Here we go. It could be that the group policy settings for the user are getting in my way. Let me switch them all off, because it should apply to this computer. Let's see if it does. UEV settings apply to Greg PC. That's good. Let's go switch off the user part. No, but they saved up for the other application. It's just that one that it didn't work for. Let's switch it off here anyway. Other VM. It can't even apply to the user. All right. What else could we do? We could try and re-register this template. Right? Tell it to pull it down again. Now, how do we do that? Well, here's that scheduled task I was telling you about. Can we go in here? Is it? No. Scheduled tasks are in admin tools, aren't they? So the top one goes and says, is the client-side cache or offline files, is that configured and working, right? So it goes and runs this little application there called CSC tool. It's part of UEV. When does it do that? Every time you log on. Anyone logs on and then just keep rerunning every 30 minutes to make sure that it's still enabled. This one here is to go and update the templates, find out what's on the network, what should be applied, pull them down, merge them into my registry so I know what I'm looking for. Runs every day at 3 o'clock in the morning. And whenever I create this scheduled task. Right? So as I create the scheduled task, it runs. So let me go and run it again. Do not have permission because I'm a standard user. Fair enough. All right, try that one again. Task completed, sounds pretty good. All right, and it's running as local system we saw there, right? Complete it on behalf of my machine. So my machine has to have permissions to pull down those files on the network. He merges them to HK local machines registry. Just for those templates. So now we're registered. Let's see what we've got. See if it can do it now. Process Explorer. And it's going to add in a new column. Version. Brilliant. Close. Now I have less. Offline, need to sync. There we go. So this is a VDI, right? I shouldn't really be doing this with having offline files on this guy here. Come on. His comment for the recording is, this is absolutely fantastic and I'm having the best day of my life. Any other positive feedback? What's going on? All right, let's try this again without offline files enabled. So anyone who logs into this machine. No. Slash force means take all of the group policy settings that are there and throw them away, and then pull in a whole new set of group policies. Just doing GP update says, look at the version numbers for the group policies that I've already applied and see if there's a new version number of anything. If there is a new version number, then go and act on the individual components in that group policy that may need to be reapplied. And it may be that you've gone and changed one setting that relates to, I don't know, password policy. If there's other group policies that also apply password policy, then I must go and reapply all of those group policies onto me again. So you don't need to do force. Force just says, some Muppet has been in my machine and edited the group policies, like the registry locations where I store them. They've been in there and messed around with them, and now I need to throw out those settings. You don't need to run force other than doing that. And it won't release it until I get rid of all of my connections. So I'll log off as test user and then back on again so that I can force offline files to disconnect my use of those files. Let's try and run it now, because now it's saying, oh, it's still saying offline. I wouldn't be able to ping it if it couldn't. And I can see the share, right? Oh, no, but I can see it as offline. Oh, yes, yes. Piss me off. All right, let's do it the other way around. I can do it in reverse. So I'll start on the other machine and then pull the settings over to this guy if my offline files want to fix themselves by then. Let's see. Okay, it's incompleted. I know, I'm hiding it because it may not work. I may have to jump back. Yes, didn't work, cool. All right, let's try it over here. Go away. Let's see, program files, system tunnels. Virtualize that one. We'll keep it simple, leave the symbols path alone. Registry, did it work? HKey current user, software. There we are, all that stuff there, good, good. Let's see if you could upload it then. Hey, good. Hidden. Ooh. No. We got to get it to the other guy next. All right, while we're here, let's see what we've got here. Garbage. Why? Because it's zipped. Right? Make things a little bit more efficient. But we know that there's nothing user identifiable in here, as in my name doesn't appear inside this at all. Right? It's just literally those registry keys. So if I want to pre-populate a bunch of users for one application, I could set it all up just right and then go and copy that file to their folder. Right? It's a predictable folder name based on that string of text that I showed you before, right? That folder name is what is in the XML file. Okay, so you can go and pre-populate stuff, so long as it's not user identifiable. If I had to go and set that setting that says, what is your username when I open up Word for the first time, and your initials, now it's user specific, right? And I can't go and copy that around. But if you're looking for a workaround, that's a nice little one. Okay, so what I want to see over this side, I've closed Process Explorer. I want to see that setting over here now. Hey, joy. Right. So, of course, that's going to bloody work, right? Because that's the same settings that I had from before. I'm not showing you anything magical there at all. In fact, what I want to look for is that these settings disappear, because I had configured them here, but he went and configured his settings over here. Last writer wins. And I overwrote them over on the other side. Yeah, well, it worked, yeah. Me as a user, I got less value out of it, though, right? Because I want my settings still to be in there. But there's no way for it to know which ones you intended. We can only work on date modified. Right? Same with a normal roaming profile. Yeah, let's see. Creating templates. Let's dig into that one too. I'll tell you what. I'll just jump into the slides real quick and see if there was anything fancy they wanted us to show you. Go for it. I think the product group's answer to that is that's not a scenario that we've tested. And it's not really the intention either, right? The intention is to have them be able to roam so that I can do it. It's not that, I mean, if my offline files had worked from the second that I wanted it to work, it would all have gone just the way that you would expected it to. and that it would be the case that Last Rider wins. And I'd go over here, had it all worked, I would have jumped onto the second machine and everything would be exactly as it was the first time. And then I go and increment the settings and change what I want and then jump back to another one, right? So in that way, it's you don't really want it to be mandatory either, right? I mean, they are user settings. Yeah. You could imagine an application where you want them to be mandatory, like that SAP application maybe where they just can't make changes. Okay, now imagine that, right? So you've defined mandatory settings and you go and open up SAP and now it doesn't have write access to the thing. What will SAP do? He'll freak out, right? He may not even have a correct response to access denied, potentially. But you're probably talking about the file copy up as well, so that maybe you even then you run SAP, goes and modifies the things, and they just get discarded again. They can't. You could, yeah. I mean, you could maybe make the share read only, but I don't think they would have tested to see if it's going to work. We could do it. I mean, maybe after we've done with the formal fancy presentation here, we can maybe try it out and see what happens. There's no harm in it. Are the settings newer? Hang on. The server is offline. Say that again. Which server? The one that holds the. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the scenario is: I go to launch an application that requires settings, so it has to talk to the file server and pull them down. File server is offline. What happens? Well, hang on, let's do that first scenario, right? Go to launch the application. I need to be able to talk to this file share, and it's not there, right? Imagine you've got some application that has nothing to do with this, that relies on a file on a remote server being there, and the remote server's not there. What do you expect that application to do? It can't work. Same here. The user state might... Yeah, that's a really long-winded question for me to summarize in a short way, but the key to it is last writer wins, right? And if I've never seen any settings, just as my example here, I've never seen any settings, so I have to go and invent the default ones. They become new, and they overwrite what's on the file share. But the next time that I go back, I remember that the date that I last uploaded or had anything to do with the file share was 10 minutes ago. Right, and I go and do a compare. If it's still not been changed in that last 10 minutes, then I stick with my own settings. Now I have history and I know what happened. Right? I just need to know the last time that I did it. I don't need like 100 versions, just the last time. And if you don't have any history, then you are the first writer. So you will overwrite it. Yeah, absolutely. But I think in that case of the server is offline when I start the application, that application shouldn't run. Because you as the administrator have said you must talk to this file share. Okay, jumping back to these slides again, just to see if there's anything I want to draw your attention to while we're here that we haven't already covered by playing around with this cool stuff. Yes. Yes, we just did that. I think we've probably covered this bit as well. Let's just jump into it. So the big blob on your left side would be a Windows computer, all right? The next blob is a file share that we've been talking to already. So the way it's working is we have this UEV agent service running as the system. Oh, question at the back. Shortcuts like an LNK file.
Yeah, on the desktop.
Yeah, we can do that.
So
if you want.
I can get a user calling
if the okay, so the scenario is a user has a shortcut on one desktop with an application installed. They log into a different machine that doesn't have that application, and now they get a shortcut, because I've told it to synchronize shortcuts, they get a shortcut for an application that's not there, right? The only way that we pull down settings onto our machine is when we launch the application. If the application is not there to launch, we don't pull down those settings, the icon never appears. The best way to distribute those LNK files for the desktop is not this way, it's through group policy preferences. So back to our architecture. Big Blob is the computer. He's got a service account. He's got a service running as local system, configured with all that stuff, watching certain applications, not all of them. Maybe he's configured to watch app one, but not app two. Registry, blah, blah. The agent embeds itself into the application. Holy crap, I'll show you how that works in a second. So that it can act as the application. And then finds all these settings as they're going on, and then dumps them out to a local package, and then sends that off to a remote share. Registry with local files, blah, blah, blah. Using offline files. No, there wasn't anything interesting in there at all. Deployment, we talked about that already. Okay, let's jump out of these slides because they're doing my head in. See if we can find something useful for you. We'll get into that in a second. Okay, templates, because I think we're racing along. This is awesome. Templates. Where was I going to do that? Here, right. So our management machine. I'm going to go and define a new template. So when I do my installation, I've got two things that I can install, a client agent or this wizard, right? So here's the wizard. Fire him off. Create a new settings template location. What this guy does is he says, give me the name of an executable on this machine. You go ahead and launch it for me, and I'll watch what it does for a while. Right? If you launch an application like Process Explorer, it has to define its columns and symbols paths. It has to configure that right away when it starts up, right? It's not like it's going to go and read those files 10 minutes later. It's going to do it right here and now because it needs them to launch. We're going to watch all of the things that it does, all of the things that it reads for. It doesn't have to write for things, but read as well. We'll watch all of those and then come back to you with a report and say, well, this is what it did. Which areas do you think are relevant? You go and choose what you want to turn on and off. Let's go launch one. Process monitor, maybe. Oh, did I launch that elevated? We'll soon find out. Now, what it's supposed to do is fire off the application. There we go, in the background. Comes up with its normal prompt about where is it going to launch to, and starts running. And now this application over here is waiting for me to go and close it. So if I do have one of those weird settings where I have to go and do something to go and activate it, like open up an INI file by going into Tools Options, I'll do that now, right? So I can maybe jump into, I don't know, where are my options? There we go. It's that symbols path again, right? And when I close it, this guy says, it's done everything that it needs to do. I'll go and create a, it's waiting for it to shut down. Now, process monitor is a bit of a dick. He is two applications, one inside of each other. It's like a zip file, so it just automatically expands. So what it's waiting for now is process monitor exe to shut down. I've really run processmon64.exe. That shut down pretty quickly. This other guy over here takes a little while to go and close off. I might even poke him to tell him to hurry it up. Or not. I am running SQL on this machine and I have no RAM. Thanks. But for the rest of the show, it's a bit dull waiting for SQL to release memory. SQL. Oh, it's done as well. Okay, good boy. SQL Server, stop. Yes. Cool. All right, on to the next part. So this is what it discovered. It's looked in the registry and looked at the file system. Hadn't found anything in the registry, maybe. There's some non-standard stuff here. But in the, didn't find anything in files, but in registry, we've got one clear winner, right? H key current user, software system internals process monitor. Makes sense. That's a standard location. What we mean by standard is if you go and read the white papers about how to develop a Win32 app, there are certain places where we want you to save config, use temp files, that sort of thing. You might use those, or you might not. Standard means you do use them. Non-standard means you didn't follow the rules, or you accessed somewhere that is known to be something that you probably shouldn't be putting your stuff, but you might anyway, or you're relying on some bolt-in application like debugging tools in this example, right? This application relies on somebody else's application. So our logic inside this window says standard locations are anywhere that are exclusively yours. Non-standard could be anywhere else. They could also be software Microsoft, because lots of things are in there, right? If I go and use an application that relies on Pen, I'll have some integration into that part there, and I'll get something about Pen stuff in there too, okay? So I want to keep that one. Don't want to synchronize this one. I don't want to synchronize debugging tools because there could be other applications that need it. So he's not ticked by default, but I can go through and choose them if I want. Files, nothing in the standard locations. But I went and dropped stuff kind of everywhere else, really. Icon cache, things like this. Do I really need any of these? Quick launch, desktop.ini? No, they're not interesting to me. Don't track and monitor those. If those changes happen on another machine, don't synchronize them anywhere else. All right? All right. So let's give it some information here. So this is my friendly name along the top. The application that I want to watch for, right? So this is launching procmon.exe, not procmon64.exe, because this one is kind of a weird one, right? He does that double program. We've got a major version of 2 and a minor version of 9.5. All of the settings that are in here will work for any version of Process Monitor. In fact, I can dump anything that I want into that registry key. Process Monitor, when it starts up, just like every other application, will just read all of the stuff in its location. It won't go and ask for individual registry keys. It'll say, just give me what's in there. And then the executable will go, that's important, never heard of that one. Right, so I can dump anything in there. So I don't have to be too specific about these file versions for the application. Right? For now, it's going to go and set up my template for me using them anyway, and I'll go back and edit them afterwards. And here I put in my name, that I'm the guy that created it, and email, yeah, can't imagine a use for that one. All right, so create me an XML file. Where are you going to put it? On the desktop. Save. Close. Let's go see what's in there. So friendly name, an identifier that we did create this with 2.95. So we can change this to say anything that we want, remember? Oh, I typoed my own name. That's not very cool. All right, processmonitor.exe. I could have another one that's called processmonitor64.exe. I'd have to create a new XML file. It's one executable per file. Major. The major file version number was 2. Right? The minimum is 9.5. You know what I mean by majors and minors? Yeah. Now we've got a sliding scale. So it could be anywhere from version 1 all the way up to version 3, I think he's up to now. And these minor version, so what happens after the dot, that can vary from a number from 0 up to, I don't know, 999. Right, so now I've said anything from 1.0 all the way up to 3.99999. Okay? Because I don't know what's going to happen in version 4. Maybe he's got a different system altogether. He's not using the registry key. Who knows? Or I could do this. And I just disregard the version numbers altogether. But there were two sets of versions in there, weren't there? Product version and file version. Okay? So they're the different properties you can have on the registry key. And then we're going to specify this path down here. All right? That's as simple as it is. If this was not registry, if I was caring about a set of files, I would just have files in there. And then list the folder locations that I want to go and monitor and copy files for. Don't use it for copying big files like, I don't know, normal dot dot. Right, you use it for files that are small, configuration files. Right, you use redirection for big files, data files. Because we need these to be fast. We're going to wait for this data to come in before we launch an application. And then we go and put it into our share. right? Once it's in the share, these guys wait until 3:30 every morning with their scheduled task to bring them in, right? To merge them in. Go back and edit an existing one, or I can validate one. So you've built one by hand. Let's make sure there's no typos in it. That's what validation does. Cool. Change the scheduled task. I think there was a cute slide for that. Oh yeah, let's do that then. Okay. There's yes. We can either be in the home directory. I talked about that before, or we can be an agent. Yes. Only work on 7 and newer, on the server and on the client. The .NET is 4.0 or 3.5. 4.0 comes natively; it's already switched on and activated, right? So you don't have to do anything. But if you've got 3.5, it can use that as well. Doesn't matter if it's what its bitness is, but doesn't go older than that, right? We're not doing anything for Vista. A lot of those settings that we were talking about, the locations and the methods and things like that, are both user and computer, but some are not. These ones we can configure with the group policies, as I've been doing, or you can use PowerShell, which invokes a WMI statement, okay, to go and configure them. When we do our installation, agentsetup.exe is the installer. It is also an MSI file for easy distribution. When you install it, there's no options, right? It's next, done. Right, so it's really easy to automate. If I want to automate it, slash quiet, and I could say, well, this is just going to use the default Microsoft templates. Right, so this is the setting storage path for every user that logs on here. This is where they're going to dump their settings to. Right, so I can do it for machines that maybe aren't managed. Right, not managed means maybe not domain joined. They still need to be able to write to that folder location. Right, so the everyone permission needs to be set. What else have we got here? Oops. If I'm going to deploy it to UEV, then I don't want to have to use offline files, so sync method equals none. Turns off offline files if I'm doing it that way. And the last one, sync enabled equals false. For me, for each, oh no, this is for the entire setup, isn't it? Enable UEV per user. Sync enabled equals false. So for each user, I'd have to go and turn this setting back on again. So the default setting is pretty much everyone is switched off. Right, fine, fair enough. Anything interesting in there? No, we've done all of that. Default templates, yes. IoT created templates. We've looked enough of that. We can be more granular about how we want to define which settings should come down with us. All settings within this particular key, and don't go any further, or all subkeys as well. And there is a growing community of people uploading them. They had a little competition when they first released it to go and build your own, so you'll see them up there for Firefox and Reddit and all kinds of Notepad++ and weird stuff like that. So you go to that link there and you can go and download them. I think there's 24 up there at the moment. And it's just a good place to get an idea of how you build templates, right, to mess around with version numbers and files and subfiles and things like that. So you can figure out how your applications are going to work. We've done that demo already. I think this is the same one. The name and the identifier, the process that we're going to monitor for, registry, and there's file, right? Copy everything that's in my app data location. Environment variable is app data. So you go to the app data location, which would be the roaming location, right? Go to Adobe Acrobat 10.0. Whatever's in there, that's the bit that's going to roam with me. I can't go and say C:\temp. Right? That's not a place that can roam. It has to be within the user's profile. Yeah, I don't think there's anything cool there. Let's go and figure out how it actually works then, eh? Agent configuration, is that it? Yeah. So these are the settings that relate only to the computer but not to the user. Hoorah. Let's do how it actually works. What do I want to show you? Delete test user's profile. Yeah, we've got the settings up there now. Okay, cool. So we have the settings up in the share. What I'll do is I'll log into this machine here and get rid of test user's profile altogether. Right? So as though he's never logged in again, and then run the application again. And then I'll pull down the settings and merge them. And you can see how we're actually merging them. All right. So first things first, I have to get rid of my logon. So I need to log on as the administrator and delete my profile. You can't see that. Shouldn't I reboot the computer before logging in again? I did control alt delete sign out, so I'm logged off. I don't need to reboot. So now my registry is unloaded. My profile is just free for me to go and delete as another user. So I'll log on as administrator and get rid of it. I need an S, thank you. Let's try that. Okay, let's get rid of our guy. And where is it? Here. 83 megabytes, didn't do anything. It's amazing, isn't it? Imagine that roaming around without even having done any work yet. Okay, that's him gone. Now, what I want to do is capture everything that goes on, right? Everything that goes on. How do we do that one? Process monitor. So the administrator will launch process monitor. I'll switch users, then log on as the other guy, this test user. Process monitor. Working? Is it dead? Off it goes. Capturing many events. Brilliant. Right. Switch user. Really good way to troubleshoot somebody's slow log on as well, right? If it takes 10 minutes for one particular person to log on every time, just log on to somebody else and trace it. Find the hang. Anyone done that before? Played Find the Hangout. It's brilliant fun, right? Needle in a haystack. What was that one that Blackadder called it? It's like trying to find a piece of hay in a gigantic stack of needles. Nice and slow. Here we go. All right. So I'm going to go and launch Process Explorer, because I know that there's a policy that relates to that one. Internals. Too fast. Process Explorer. Can't run it elevated, just run it as me. Hey, it came down with the settings. Hey, all right. And close it off. Let's jump back to my administrator session and see what happened. All right, here's your gigantic stack of needles for you. 2 million events. All right, so what are we looking for here? Let's try and make life a little bit easier, and I will load a filter that I created earlier to save us an awful lot of time. Okay, so what I'm showing you here is a process called agent service, right, which is the service that is UEV. I'm showing you Process Explorer, because that's the thing that I launched, but I want to see how this guy managed to affect that guy, right? How did he go and change his settings? Because right, we know that they're in there in the registry, but how did they actually get into the registry? Let me just double check on that filter and see what else I'm showing. Okay. So what I want to see is, well, let's clear it off altogether. I can see that this is the time when this guy started. Right, Process Explorer was no, I can't. I've got another filter on there. Let me go and change that one, because I'm still filtering on files too. Let's remove those. Okay. So where does he really start? Mm-hmm. process start, right? That's Process Explorer starting. Immediately before Process Explorer started, this guy here was running, mav inject 64. You can see from the pop-up that he's also to do with UEV. Mav inject 64. What else was happening before that one? Well, agent service was launching mav inject, right? He's trying to fire up this thing, this executable, process start. What's the parent process? 376 is its parent. That's the guy that launched me. 376, right? Agent service asked this guy to start and do something. Something to do with injection, it sounds like. What else? We know that there's a file coming down or a folder that has that Process Explorer 15-3 in it somewhere. Let's see if we can find something about that one. That's in there. Process Explorer 15-3. Because I know that that's coming down from the network, but what happens when it comes down from the network? This guy here was the last one to touch it, and then Process Explorer was launched, and a bunch of things happened in between, right? So that's 0.12 seconds where that mav inject was doing whatever it needs to do. Right? But this guy had the file, and then, well, that's where he had it, right? So he's downloaded it to his own cache, and then some magic happened. Let's have a look. I know that it also modified the registry, don't I? It modified that symbols path too. Let's see what modified the symbols path. The only application that set the registry key of symbols path was me. Process Explorer did it himself. It wasn't agent service, and it wasn't this inject thing. I did it. The thing that I double-clicked on did it for me. He wrote to that registry key. Who launched this? Me. It's not like they're impersonating somebody else. It's not like it's running as system. It's really running as me. I did it, right? Test user, with the thing that he double-clicked on, made the registry change. Even though it didn't know about it. Process Explorer knows nothing about UEV, but he was able to write to the registry in the right place. How? So the stack is for this one event, right? For me to be able to write to this key, what I had to do was, I can't write to the registry, right? I'm not going to, me as the guy who writes Process Explorer, I'm not going to go and build something that can write to the registry. There's probably a registry provider that I can just ask, can you do that for me, please, right? So I'll go from my user mode, and I'll go all the way down to the kernel mode and say, here's a bunch of instructions, just write to the registry. And he'll format, I'll give that to the next layer down, and he'll say, oh, I don't know what that means, but I'll pass it to the next guy, and I'll keep passing it down until I get to the registry provider. And he'll get a command that he understands, and he'll go and write to the registry. And then for this one action, I have to wait for all of these guys to finish doing their job and come all the way back up and say, job done. That's what a stack is. And we read it from the bottom up, right? So my application talked to this one, talked to that one, all the way up here. As we transitioned into kernel mode, right, where it actually got written. All the way along there, this guy was involved. This DLL has injected itself into the stack of my application. Now, normally the stack would contain things like, I don't know, TCP/IP, the keyboard, fonts, things like that, right? Things that are useful to my application. But this thing has injected itself in. Mav inject 64 goes and injects itself in here, right? And the 64-bit part of it says, well, this is a 64-bit application. If I was running a 32-bit application, we have a 32-bit DLL that will do the same thing, inject itself in. While I'm injected in there, this DLL can capture these things and say, oh, look, he's looking to read something from the registry, and it's something that I monitor. So I better go and fill that up real quick. So this DLL goes off, talks to the settings, finds them, those registry keys, brings them right back, and me, I push them in. I set the registry, right? So I use my own credentials because I know that I can write to it. So it doesn't really matter what the application is. It just needs to be 64-bit or 32-bit. And this thing, based on the rules that we gave it through templates, will go through and do all the work for me. Pretty cool. now we know how it works, right? And now we've got, there's an event log system as well that you can look at too, right? And the normal event viewer to see how all that stuff is erroring, if it is erroring. Now, let me jump in here and show you the last little bits. I think it's a little goodbye here because we're at the right time. You guys want to get to the good seats in the movie theater cinema. Was there anything else? Discovering the internals, we just did that one. Cool. So we know how this product works, right? The best way of learning about how whether I should do something is to go and is to play around with it, but figure out how it works first and use your own normal natural troubleshooting skills. I'll get to you in a second, buddy. Just hold on. We know how to configure it, group policies. We know how to deploy it, MSI. We know how to manage it as well, so we know how all these little bits and pieces work. And we're ready to go, I think. Go and get the release candidate. You can play around with it. There's a really good video on the internet that shows you step by step how to do it. When you forget what I've just told you right now, you can go back and do that one again. Like I said before, super duper important, not just something to flash your phone at and forget all about, right? Go actually go and do this. Make sure that we go and get the quality higher and higher and higher at this event. No point sitting there complaining. If you don't like it next year, it was your own damn fault for not voting today. And you got 15 minutes to get to the movie. Last question at the back there. User certificates. Can we roam user certificates? I know that we can't do EFS files because we can't roam the credentials to it. And I will guess that we can't roam that either because it's a private, the private key to that certificate we can't get access to. So no, I'd say that's not going to work. Yeah? This is part of MDOP. To get MDOP, you need to have software assurance on all of your desktops. You need to have paid for MDOP on top of that, which is about like 10-ish US dollars per head. Yeah. Next one. I'll get to you in a second. Okay. Mappy profiles. You're talking about mail profiles. Yeah? Yep. Mappy profiles are just big fat registry keys, nothing more. So yes, you can roam Mappy profiles, no problem. Yep. Any other questions for you guys? No? Cool. Make sure you're filling your survey, and I'll be here tomorrow afternoon too for AD. Really nerdy session. Really nerdy. Yes. Thanks.